I believe it's starting. There it goes.
Thanks, Stephanie. Can you do roll call, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Sue Krager?
Here.
Derek Espadas?
Here.
Beth Coble?
Here.
Ray Jordan?
Off mic, here.
Lily Bogan? Wesley Derbyshire? And Kate Elliott.
Here.
Wesley, I do see that you're here. You're
pretty. Yeah, I think it's just muted, but I have them down.
Okay.
And we have quorum.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie. As I see that recorder Kazaris Kelly has joined us as well, I will try to make the next couple agenda items pretty speedy so we can move on to her, as I know the recorder has many, many things to do in the coming weeks. Agenda item number three, consideration of and possible approval of minutes from our September 2024 meeting. Does any member have any issues, questions, changes to be noted about the minutes? Commissioner Jordan?
Thank you again, Stephanie. Thank you very much. Great minutes. I think they're very accurate, and I would like to propose that they be accepted.
Great. We have a motion on the floor for that. Can I get a second?
I can second that. I finally figured out where the mic is.
Awesome. Thank you, Commissioner Derbyshire. Stephanie, can you take roll call, please, for this motion?
Sue Krager?
Is it okay if I vote? I wasn't at the meeting last time. Can I approve them?
I think you can. We've sent them for review. If you choose not to, that's okay, too.
No, I can, yes.
Derek Espadas?
Yes.
Beth Coble?
Yes.
Ray Jordan?
Yes.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Yes.
Kate Elliott?
Yes.
Motion passes 6-0.
Thank you, Stephanie. And then we do just want to make a call to the audience. I see most people that I know are maybe here in their official capacity, but if there are members of the community here that are observing, that want to make a comment or have a question, now would be your time to do it. So, you know, take yourself off mute or raise your hand to be recognized. Okay. If I'm not seeing anyone, recorder Kazaris Kelly, it's nice to see you. As always, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your outreach and your office's outreach, to us here at NCODI. We're open to any presentation or idea, offering of knowledge that you have in terms of disability and voting, especially in Pima County. So I guess I'll just leave the floor with you and your staff.
Thank you, Zach. How much time do I have?
So, I kind of made the agenda item for 40 minutes. I understand if it needs to be shorter.
This is where I want to be, Zach. We're fine. Thank you. That's okay.
Yeah. And then I know commissioners might have questions. So if you want to take them as they come or just, if you want us to save until the end, that's fine too. So it's kind of up to what to you as to what your schedule allows.
Yes. I think I have the next hour. Okay. So we'll see what we can do. Basically, it's until my assistant comes and grabs me for the next thing. But I'm going to go ahead and present. I have a presentation, and we will see how this goes.
Okay.
There we go. And
yeah, there we go.
There was a way. One second. Okay, so can everybody see that okay? 2024 election cycle?
Yeah. We do have a couple, some blind members, like on the commission. So providing kind of what that's, what the slides say might be also beautiful, helpful as we go through. So.
Okay. And I was so worried about making sure that the PowerPoint was ready. I failed to introduce myself. Skuktash, Anya Nipchugi, Gabriela Caceres Kelly, Bissamo Ochkuk.
Excuse me for just one second. I just want to say on my end it says can't display content.
Oh,
okay.
Okay, just so you guys are aware. Thank you.
Yes. Sorry. Sorry about that. Okay. I see it. I don't know why that would be, Commissioner Derbyshire. I'm not good with Teams.
Is anyone else, receiving that error? That might be a setting on your computer. You might have to leave the meeting and come back in.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I am Gabriela Caceres Kelly. I'm the Pima County Recorder. I was elected in 2020, took office in 2021. I'm a middle-aged Native American woman, very smiley, with dark brown skin and dark brown hair and eyes. And I think I'm wearing big dangly earrings today. And so this is a presentation that says the 2024 election cycle, Gabriela Caceres Kelly, Pima County Recorder. There is the Pima County Recorder's office logo, which is split in two different shades of purple, indicating the two different houses that I am responsible for. One is voter related, having to do with voter registration and early voting and signature verification of your ballots. And the other is recordation, which is the preservation of public documents. Most often it's property deeds, property maps, liens, that sort of thing. There's a book indicating knowledge and the sun for the future in technology. And around the entire circle is a braid, because I wear my hair in braids. And that was a little nod to me being the first Native American to hold this elected office. And then, of course, we have just a little bit of blue Pima County to show that we're, although we're a separate independent office, run by an elected official, we are still a part of the larger county. So I've never presented in Teams, so this will be interesting also as I navigate my way through. Oh, perfect. This next slide says important election dates, and we have a couple of dates crossed through. November 5th is the general election, which of course is coming up, but the crossed out language says ballots mailed to uniformed and overseas voters September 21st. We mailed ballots out to those who were eligible to receive a ballot. People started voting almost instantly. So we actually, a lot of times people say the 27 days or 28 days of voting in Arizona, but really it's 45 days. We send out those ballots 45 days before the election to those who qualify for that ballot, and we send it as a PDF. by email for some, and then we also send a physical ballot to others if they request it. And we can receive that back either by email, by fax, or by mail. The last day to register to vote was October 7th, so we have passed that deadline, so that is also crossed out. And early voting begins, and early ballots were mailed on October 9th. I think this is an important time to share with you all that ballots were unexpectedly delayed this cycle. We were able to send out chunks of the ballots over a number of days, and because of the federal holiday on Monday, many people are just now getting their ballot. And so if you have not received your ballot, we ask you to sit tight and give it at least another day before giving us a call back. We're asking people to wait until Friday, but most people have been begun receiving their ballots. The last day to request a mail ballot, if you are not signed up for the active early voting list or if you did not already request one, is October 25th. There's nothing special about the way that your voter registration has to be. You just need to request it, and every single Pima County voter is eligible to request a ballot. They can do it online through our online portal, or they can give us a call and do it verbally over the phone. The recommended deadline to mail back your ballot is October 29th. That gives you 7 days for your ballot to get returned to our office. We strongly recommend that. A lot of people, if they're in the Tucson area, they're like, why is it going to take 7 days? Well, it's usually not. But we are mailing ballots all over the country, and there are parts of rural Pima County that may take up to 7 days, and so we have that as a blanket statement for everybody. But if you are uncomfortable with that, if you don't want to pop it back in the mail, first, we have not heard of any mail delays. The delay that we have for sending your ballot is related to the printers. It is not related to the mail. So it's still very much safe. It's still recommended. We love when you mail back your ballots. But if not, if you would like to come into an early voting site, you may do that. And then there are 4 locations that will have drive-up ballot drop-off. It's a hard one for me to say. It's a brand new one. Drive-through ballot drop-off, where you can just drive your car up. You don't have to get out, and you can hand your ballot through your window to my staff, and they will take it from you and put it immediately in the box. And that we have 1 location downtown at our 240 North Stone. We have 1 at Country Club, which is Country Club in Valencia. We have another at Fellowship Bible Church, which is near, Broadway and Kolb. And then we will have 1 in Oro Valley at the Oro Valley Library. Election day, of course, is Tuesday, November 5th. And you can vote or drop off your early ballot on that day. It is important to know that if you would like your ballot to be, counted as part of the election night results, you must submit your ballot early. The ballots that we get on election day, we don't receive them until the day after, and so they are not counted as part of those initial results. And so if you want to be a part of that voice, please return it early. We have a couple of QR codes for voter resources. We have a register and update. We get a lot of questions about people updating their addresses in the middle of an election. They're very worried about it. It's okay. You can go ahead and do that. If you do have a registration update, it's the same voter registration form, and we will see that you're already registered. We will update your record, and then if needed, we will send you a new ballot if that is something, if you've already been issued one. We have an Alert Me, which is a text or email alert system. We will send you a text when we send you your ballot, when we receive your ballot, when it's been signature verified, and when it's been turned over, or if we have an issue with your ballot, or if we make changes, if you make changes to your voting record, we will send you a notice also. I have a link for the calendars and then the voting locations on our website. So the accessible voting options. So people think there's only a couple. I want to make sure that everybody knows about all of these, and then I'm going to go a little bit more in depth for each one. So the first one is vote early from home, and there are 6 different options. So you can vote by mail one time. You can vote by mail every time, which is the active early voting list. We call it AVEL. You can receive a Braille ballot. You can receive a large print ballot. You can vote by military and overseas voting. Or you can go to team voting, which is extremely limited, and I will talk a little bit more about that later. Voting early in person, your options are to vote early in person, drop your ballot off early at a voting site, vote early on an accessible voting device, or emergency voting. Then the last option is vote on election day. You can drop off your mail ballot at a vote center, which is, I'm arguing, that is not early voting. We actually call those late earlies because it's an early ballot, but you're turning it in really late. So the other options are to vote in person on election day, or you can vote in your car on election day. So I will go through each one of those. And actually, let me just share a little bit, because I don't have a slide for the vote in your car on election day. That's an option that a lot of people are don't know about. And the way that you would do it is you would simply drive up to any vote center on election day, and this is only for election day. You could either honk your horn or flag a marshal will come out every 15 minutes to check to see if anybody needs help outside. Or you can let another voter know, like, hey, could you let them know I need help out here? And whatever it is that you choose, they can actually print a ballot for you. They will bring out the electronic poll book. They will sign you in your car, and they will issue you a ballot right then and there, and they will wait by the car as you vote that ballot. And then, of course, you turn it back over, and then that's it. You've voted. And so two people of opposite party would come, and they would make sure that that you're helped there, and you don't have to explain a reason. It's very standard, and they offer that at every single election day voting site. And for we've even run into this with COVID protocols. Let's say that you have COVID or something, and you wanted to put like a sign in the door, in the window that just says, I have COVID. They could then, help you by, remaining, socially distanced. Okay. So of course, many of you are familiar with vote by mail and the, active early voting list. So this is an option for you to get a mail ballot one time or sign up for the active early voting list, which we call the active early voting list. It used to be called the permanent early voting list, but, sometimes people will receive ballots, but they don't vote those ballots. And so the legislators made a change where if they don't ever use their mail ballot within a 4-year cycle, they will be removed from the AVEL, so we will stop mailing them their ballot because in theory they're not using it. But they're eligible to sign right back up if they want to. And we will send a notice before we cancel anyone's mail ballot, but it will not cancel their voter registration. So you can vote from the privacy of your own home. It allows you to spend more time with your ballot. You can receive help from the assistant of your choice. The postage is already paid, and then you have options to drop off in person early or on election day. And the image that we have is a photo of an early mail ballot partially covered by a yellow return envelope and a white ballot affidavit. And there is space for the voter to sign and an additional area for a voter assistant to fill out, which I'll talk more about a little later in the presentation. We have large print ballots, and this, thank you so much to, I don't know if, oh, she's not on, my assistant Cynthia, she's our model. If you can see here, there, she is holding up what looks like maybe, I want to say a 3.5 foot long, ballot that is maybe 1.5 feet wide. And then a smaller ballot, which is a standard size, which is a 19 inch. I think it's 8.5 by 19 inch. The dimensions, that are listed on the PowerPoint are actually incorrect, because we just updated this to have a brand new, image of the current ballot. And so you can still, the large print ballots, you can still vote in the privacy of your own home. The ballots are duplicated using an express voting machine upon receipt by two operators of an opposite party who must agree on the voter's intention. And the Pima County Recorder's Office, we call the voter directly and we let them know we're sending you your large print ballot. It's on the way. And all of the materials inside are also large print, so that people can, read them and see what they're signing. We call the large print, like a tablecloth. It is very, very large. And so in order for people to register to vote for the first time and request a large print, all they need to do is write on it, large print, and we will send them this. Or if you are already a registered voter and you want to add this to the type that you receive, all you have to do is give our office a call and we will make a note on your record and then you will receive a large print ballot. Oops. We have Braille ballots, and they're designed and printed by the Elections Department. The Braille transcription is provided by the Arizona School for the Deaf and Blind, and the Pima County Recorder's Office will call the voters to let them know that they're to expect their Braille ballot. Last cycle, we had paper return envelopes for the Braille ballots, and if you see here in this photo, there's a picture of a Braille ballot that is bound together with a ring. I don't know what it's called, but it's a booklet, and two hands are reading in Braille. And when people returned it, because on this one, on the Braille ballot, people can circle the areas, their selections. And then what will happen is when we receive it, my office is responsible for verifying the signature and then sending it over to the Elections Department. But the Elections Department has two Braille readers who will agree on the voter's intention and mark it on a standard size, express ballot. And so they will then interpret that. And so the last time we sent these out, we sent out large envelopes for the return because we need to have the booklet back. And they ripped. They were just very flimsy. And we got complaints about it, which is rightfully so. Like, they were just terrible. And so this time we've included a plastic bubble mailer for the return, and we have the ballot affidavit taped to the outside of it in an area that can be easily signed. We do need to improve this process. We don't have something that says, oh, this is the return ballot, and we're sending it, you know, to folks who read Braille. I think this is an opportunity of growth for us. And we're very interested, to learn more about how we can serve, Braille ballot users. I think this cycle we're sending out 8. And then I think for large print, I want to say we're probably sending around 50 or 60. Accessible voting booths. We have wheelchair accessible voting booths, which have the wide-legged private voting booth that provides writing surface for the voter. The image description says photo of wheelchair accessible voting booth next to a standard voting booth. The accessible booth has wider legs and the writing surface is lower than the others. We found, though, of course, that not everybody is in a wheelchair and needs that type of space. And so the other thing that we have, my apologies there, is we have a seated voting table. So it's just a regular table with regular seating and a little privacy screen. So it's a table with chair and privacy screen available to any voter who needs to sit while voting. And they're available at all of our early voting sites and no request is needed. The image description is a photo of a 6-foot-long white plastic table with 2 chairs and 2 cardboard privacy screens in a voting location. The screen has an image of a waving American flag in red, white, and blue, and the word vote is below the flag. We have also the Express Vote machine, which has a let me read the description first. The express voting machine that shows simple instructions directly on the machine. There is a set of headphones plugged in and a colorful remote control that allows the voters to go up, down, left, right, choose volume and contrast and home. And the standard privacy screen is not pictured. It has a touch screen or a joystick. A ballot marking device, so you can either use the joystick or you can just touch the screen directly. The voter inserts a narrow cardstock in the device, and the device reads ballots to voters via headphones. There are large print options available. You can turn the screen off. If we have blind users who want to maintain their privacy, they can turn the screen off and it can still be used and read in that way. Multiple languages are available. The voter marks the selections and can return to any race to make changes before a final review. And the voter reviews selections, and the selections are printed on the cardstock ballot. So you actually get like a paper, a ballot to review, and the ballot is then folded and placed in a ballot affidavit envelope, and the signature is still required. This is actually how I choose to vote. I want to make sure that my staff knows how to use these devices. I stress that it is so important that nobody be made to feel as if they are inconveniencing my staff or to be made to wait while they learn how to use it and they're trying to flip through instructions. So we have really emphasized how to utilize these devices. It is a very standard procedure. I myself will hop around and I will show up at locations and I will choose to vote this way. And they know if the recorder is coming in, she's going to expect you to know how. And they actually talk about that in training. This is also what we use as a backup device, especially during the monsoons. We lost power at multiple locations. And this has a battery pack in it, and so we're still able to issue ballots. The day that we had a global tech outage, which was around the primary election date, we were still able to issue provisional ballots through the use of this device, which meant that no voters were waiting, which was really wonderful. The elections department designs the ballots, and they upload them here, and then we get to utilize them. So they're really pleasant to use, actually. I really enjoy it. And the very first time that I, you know, I did this, and I said, I want to use the express machine. And, you know, I watched my staff scramble, and I remember one of the women said, this feels like when my mother-in-law comes over. Like, they were so pressured and so stressed. And I'm like, you know what? That's good. Because everybody deserves to have, an opportunity to vote with dignity. And when you come somewhere and you say, I would like to use the express ballot machine, and somebody like sighs or somebody somehow expresses frustration, that's not being able to have dignity when you're voting. And so we have made it so that it is so standard, that it is my staff. I can't speak for the elections department. The elections department has 130 locations and they hire 1,000 people, but my people are working in these locations for at least a week at a time. And they are using it every single day. We've already, it's standard procedure here. The next slide talks about team voting. Team voting is very, very limited. It is available to location-bound voters, who otherwise cannot receive a ballot by mail in time to vote. So the photo shows a proposition information, voting instructions, envelope, and a pen sitting atop a blurred-out ballot. Team voting, and I want to stress, this is not for people who are like, oh, I don't have a ride. I can't come over. This might be for somebody who planned on voting on election day, or maybe they were an early voter. Let's say that you were an early voter and you had your ballot, and the day you went to vote, at your kitchen table, maybe you spilled your coffee all over it, and now all of a sudden you have a ruined ballot. And let's say that you're in a hospital bed and you can't leave that hospital bed at home. Something like that, you know, that would be a situation where we wouldn't be able to get one to you. We can't mail it to you in time. And it's not as simple as just you telling a friend or a family member, hey, can you take my ballot or something like that? So, hospitals, this is a situation in hospitals, rehabilitation centers, jail, or it could be a homebound situation where leaving your home is physically not possible. What we ask is that people try to use the mail system first. That is going to be the most helpful thing that you can do, again, for all of the reasons we've already explained. And we have very limited resources, and voters are vetted to ensure that the team voting services are the voters' only options. So again, if you have somebody within the household who is able to help you or drive you or something like that, we're not going to be able to deploy people. But if we do, two operators of the opposite party will visit the voter and provide them with a ballot on site. So if we have to go to your hospital room, we will show up there. We usually have three ballots in case you make a mistake. But the ballot must be issued, voted, and returned on site. And the operators, they bring multiple ballots with them, and we take all of the ballots with us. But if the voter needs voter registration, like let's say you need to update your ballot or something like that on site, we can do that there too. And then we also have bilingual teams whole go as well in case you need a Spanish language translation or something like that. And the amount of assistance is up to you. If you're in a hospital bed, and you're able to still, you know, make your own mark and choose your selections independently, we're going to allow you to do that. But if you need somebody to fill out the bubbles for you and all of that, we will help you do that as well. So, sometimes it's simply handing the ballot to somebody and then giving them the space and privacy so that they can fill it out, and then taking it with us. And then sometimes it's much more, extensive support. So I want to talk about the signatures really quickly. We utilize the Secretary of State Signature Verification Guide, and we're looking for both broad and local characteristics that match your voting record. The name doesn't have to be exact. One really frequently asked question we get is about middle names. Like, what happens if I don't put my middle name? It's fine. We're looking to see if you have at least 3 points of contact where we can say, oh yeah, that's their letter G. That's their letter S. They always write it the same way. But if you have an Arizona driver's license, we likely have that signature on file. And so we recommend taking a look. Sometimes people have like, this is my professional signature and this is my family personal signature, and sometimes they're a little different. And so we recommend you look at what you have on your driver's license because we have that record. So here are these are actually my signatures. And I have, there are 6 different signatures, and you can see, the very first one, says Gabriela O. Cáceres, and every single letter is written out very carefully, probably very slowly. In the first two, they're kind of similar. I write a very characteristic lowercase g, but I make it larger. And then my O's are very distinct. My C is very large as well. And I have a very loopy Z and an accent mark. You can see later on as I go further and further with my signature that I eventually change my name to Gabriela Cáceres Kelly, and now my O is now missing. And then you can see in the very last sample that I forget how to spell my name apparently, because I only put G-A-B-R and then C. I don't write the whole Cáceres. I just write the letter C as if it's my middle name, and then I write the name Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y. And then my most recent is just G.C. Kelly. And so this is a picture of a ballot affidavit. It has the date that I signed and the phone number. And so I wanted to talk about additional types of signatures that we sometimes see. So this is a sample of somebody who needed a voter assistant. So if you sign and you need somebody is helping you either fill out the bubbles or they're helping you in any way with your ballot affidavit, we want them to fill out their information below yours. So yours would go in the very top portion, your name, the date that you signed, and your phone number. And that should be your current number, however way that if we have questions, we can reach you. Then you would put the assistant's name and their name and address, and then that's it. If, for example, you're not able to sign your name, but you are able to make your mark, even if it's the letter X and that's all you can do, and somebody else is going to fill out the rest, we need to have that mark. If there's a situation that's much more extreme than that, let's say that somebody has a breathing tube and they're able to communicate with their family, but they're not able to make that mark, we're going to need to somehow communicate with them. And that would be something that we would need to work out internally so that we can just verify that that this is your will, that you wanted this ballot returned, and that you have given somebody authority to help you. And for some people, they are going to need a voter assist every single time they vote. If you would like, we can make a note in your record that says voter assist every time, and we will just confirm that that is your will and that's what you want. If you instead want us to call you every single time because you don't know who your assist would be, we can call you every time, but you just be prepared for the phone call. We have people who who choose both of those things. They're like, you know what? I want to put it in the mail and I don't want you to bother me anymore. I'm giving my authorization that it is what I say it is, and my signature is always going to look different. We can make notes like that so that you're not pestered by that. And again, you maintain dignity and the security of your ballot. And then if you want us to check on you and say, hey, did you submit this ballot? Every single time, we will happily do that as well. We strongly recommend you to sign up for ballot alerts and email or text alerts. You can do that at recorder.pima.gov. And here is a photo of a QR code and a little metal bird that is reading text messages that have been loved. And it says, official Pima County Recorder's Office, your name here. You have opted in to receive text messages notifying you of the status of your early ballot. To stop receiving notifications, please text backstop. And then later, there's a second one that says, official Pima County Recorder's Office, as a voter on the active early voting list, your ballot request has automatically been created for the 2022 general election and will be mailed on 10/12/2022. To stop receiving notifications, please text backstop. The other resource that we have for both early voting and election day, and any question that you have in between, whether that be about identification requirements, voting locations, hours, anything like that, you can visit pima.vote. We work in collaboration with the elections department, and that way you're not having to run back and forth between two different sites. But our site's pretty good. We actually put a lot of information about election day voting also on our website. But, and that is it. That is all I have. And, I'm available for some questions.
Thank you so much, Recorder Cazares Kelly. I do have a few, maybe clarifying questions for members, but, I would, you know, invite other commissioners, if they have questions, you know, take yourself off mute, raise your virtual hand, do what's accessible for you.
Seeing no hands, Zach, what are your questions?
Yeah, so just a couple questions. So I know the legislature in one of the last sessions I think they might have updated the signature verification requirements and how that's all done. Did that have it, like, given that, like, I'm not trying to advocate one way or another.
No, it's awful. I hate it. So here's something that has happened. The legislature now requires us to, it's so complicated. If you have an Arizona driver's license and you're able to put the driver's license number on a, first of all, if you have one, you could register online. So therefore it doesn't matter for if you're registering online. Where it runs into an issue is if you are registering on paper. If you're registering on paper and you have an Arizona driver's license, there has been no changes, you put the license number down, no problem. Where you have a problem is if you don't have, and I keep saying Arizona driver's license, but that also includes state ID. So if you have a non-operating identification card, that also works and is fine. However, if you do not have an Arizona driver's license and you fill out an Arizona voter registration form and you don't submit either proof of documentary proof of citizenship, which is either a birth certificate, a passport, a naturalization certificate, or a tribal ID number, we will reject it. And what that means is we hold it in suspense until we receive those documents. It's very confusing. My staff has been really stressed out about this because it very much clearly disenfranchises voters. If, however, that voter, the same voter, showed up with a, let's say, a passport to establish their citizenship, and we would also require documentary proof of residency. So let's say a utility bill that had their name and their current address and the Arizona voter registration form, we could then register them with no problem. If somebody does not have easy access to their birth certificate or a passport or their tribal ID number or naturalization certificate, we would then recommend that they fill out the federal form, which if you fill the federal form, you can register, and we would automatically register you, even without those documents, as a federal-only voter, which would mean you would be eligible to vote in three races, the president, the Senate, and the Congress, and that's it. But if you then brought your passport or and your utility bill or your bank statement or whatever, those two, you could then become a full ballot voter. Oh, it is such a nightmare. It is so confusing to explain that, because we had 500 people come through the door on the last day of voter registration, and for every single one, I had to say, what documents do you have, before I could even hand them a voter registration form. And so if they had a way to prove their citizenship and a way to prove their residency, I could give them the Arizona form, which is the better form that allows them to sign up for the active early voting list. It allows them to put more information so we have more security on their record. The federal form is so general, it just misses so much information. And so they would have to put in a separate form to sign up for active early voting. And so it just creates all these additional problems, and it's a pain. And voters have until the 31st. If anybody receives a federal only ballot and you are expecting a full ballot and only three races show up, the president, the Senate, the Congress, call us before you do anything, because we can likely figure out a way for you to prove you are who you say you are, you live where you say you are, you're an American citizen, and we can change your status, and then we can issue you a full ballot. And so this has been a really big nightmare. We've had a lot of angry callers. The number one groups that of people that are struggling with this are college students, because who travels to their dorm rooms with their birth certificate? You know, and then the other, and then they usually don't have driver's licenses. And then the other group is elders, people who are no longer driving. And then like somebody's 88 years old and let's say they're moving to a new residential facility, or, you know, they downsize their home, or they're moving in with family, they're having to put in a new voter registration, they might be changing counties, they might be changing states. Somebody is moving them, they're likely not packing their own boxes. They know that it exists somewhere in this house, but where is it? I don't know. And so we've had a tremendous amount of elders yelling at us on the phone for this really it's a terrible, and I hope we get sued. And if you guys are all looking for something to sue, I think it would be a really, because especially in the disability community, right? There's folks who, you know, maybe they're not driving, you know, maybe that is, a situation, and that if you don't have an Arizona driver's license or state ID, you're much less likely to be able to vote or register to vote with ease. It now is a burden, and we've put red tape in there. So sorry.
No,
it was a judicial ruling, which meant that we had to enforce it. And there, we have tons of organizations who are breathing down our necks to make sure. And it's all rooted in xenophobia and white supremacy. They're trying to allege that people are undocumented migrants are coming to the United States, hiding from the government in every other way, except they're registering to vote so that they can vote for three races. Come on. It's ridiculous. It's idiotic.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say on that. The other clarifying question I had is, I know, you know, overseas and military members who are overseas can vote, you know,
electronically,
like have a virtual option possibly. Yes. Is the reason that people with disabilities do not have that option that live in the state, is that like state law that prohibits that or prevents that?
Yes.
Okay.
And I know that the Arizona Association of the Blind had tried to push for legislation that would have allowed for that, and it got stripped away so much that at the very end, what they really passed was just, we ensure that we can vote by mail, which is not accessible, and it doesn't afford privacy, and it still requires assistance. And so, you know, that's not ideal either. I literally this morning had a really cool conversation with the Nevada, Secretary of State. He came to my office with the Arizona Secretary of State. They were here for part of a party. They literally had dancers. It was very risque. I don't want to offend anybody by talking about it, but there will be pictures online later, and believe me, they're juicy. But they had some kind of party to the polls event. And then they came on over. They had a DJ. They had dancers. There was stilts. I blush to talk about the rest. Anyway, but he was here and I was talking with him, and he mentioned tribal voting, Native American voters who live in tribal rural communities in Nevada can request an electronic ballot and they can vote from their phones. And I said, what? How? Tell me how? And they go online, they can request it or they can do it over the phone. And you know, however they're connecting to the internet, attest that they live in a rural area. And then we send them the ballot. The ballot comes back. We print it. You know, two people of opposite party verifies that kind of a thing. And I said, what about folks with disabilities? And he said, yeah. He said, that is already a part of it. Like they can use, it's an expansion of the military and overseas. It's a homegrown system that they have. And, I asked him if he would send us the legislation, and he's going to send us the legislation because that is something that would absolutely benefit so many people to be able to vote electronically, within our state. And I absolutely support it. I think it's incredibly exciting. And it makes so much sense. And so, it is our Arizona legislature, and the Arizona legislature, those who are concerned with voters have been in the minority party and have not been productive. And maybe that changes. I don't know. But if there is that change, people are asking me as a recorder, what is my wish list? And things like that are on my wish list. To have accessible voting for voters with disability, for Native American communities, rural communities, that just makes sense to me. Because people in rural communities aren't going to have as many options, and on and on and on and on, right? When we make it accessible for one group, it's accessible for everybody. And so I think that's something that it's a real opportunity. I think it's a real opportunity, but we'll see. But it is because of state law that we don't have that currently, and the way that we currently have those ballots designed, they're not very accessible either. So we have two cards, is what we're calling them, two separate pages, and they're front and back and front and back, which is really four pages. Well, when we have to mail to military and overseas, if we send it electronically, we have to reformat that, and instead of, a 19-inch paper, who has a 19-inch paper printer? Nobody. Who has 19-inch paper? Like, that's a specialty thing. So what we have to do is we have to make it 8 pages of 8.5 by 13, which is standard size printer paper. And we are sending 8 pages to military and overseas, which in theory they would print, fill it out, scan. They would also have to sign, and they have to, we cannot accept a typed signature by law. It has to be written or written with a stylus. So there's no way of, we won't even take military IDs like that, or there's a military code signature. We won't take that either, because by law we can't. And so, then they could send it back. Our more computer tech savvy people can download it and fill out the bubbles with their fingers and then write their names with the stylus and then send it back. But we're still running into the same issue, it's not like you can click your options. So you have to be very familiar in Adobe to be able to do something like that. And so it's really difficult. I struggle to try it. Every time I get a document and I'm having to sign my name on an Adobe, I'm like, I hate this so hard. I can't do it. Yeah, and so there's not an easy way, whereas some of these other jurisdictions, they're like, turn your phone to the side and sign with your finger. Like, that would be really helpful, for a lot of people, but we just don't have, number one, we don't have the technology. Number two, by law, we're not able to do it. But that is something I'm really interested in. And the Secretary of State was trying to unroll something right in the middle of, right before I think it was between the presidential preference and the primary election. He was trying to institute something, and we were like, are you kidding? We're in the middle of an election. Like, we can't program this. But it is something that I am very interested in and definitely advocate for and understand the importance of. So I continue to talk about it.
Thank you so much, Recorder Katharis Kelly. I'm glad to hear that, you're advocating for expanded voter options, and we really appreciate that. And it's also good to hear that Secretary Fontes is having himself a good time.
I will say that he secured funding for the expansion of the military overseas, and he's also interested in having voters with disabilities also being enable them to use that, whatever portal, I don't know, he's talking, it's a space age kind of thing, and it sounds really cool. We just didn't have the time this cycle for 15 counties to adopt that technology.
Yeah. Totally get
he did
that.
Secure the funding, which is cool.
That's awesome. You know, I know Secretary Fuentes also shares that value of expanding voter access. But at this point, you know, unless other commissioners have, you know, burning questions, you know, I can let you go because, you know, I know you're busy and we have a couple more slight agenda items to get through. You're welcome to stay on, but yeah.
So. I'm surprised no one's knocked on my door, but thank you so much for your attention and the being able to share that information. I know that that information is duplicated tenfold when we go back to our own communities and our own households and all that and are sharing that. So thank you so much for the opportunity to present.
Yes, thank you.
You might get a follow-up email to hear more details about this party.
We'll talk about that later. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Take care. All right, everyone. Thank you for your, you know, attention and, you know, always, really, voting is one of my passions. Democracy itself is, consistently on my mind. So, it's always good to hear about, you know, how that impacts our, local communities in Pima County. So the next item on the agenda is a discussion and possible approval of a memorandum on sidewalk maintenance access and ordinance 25-12. As you will like, so I know there might be discussion and changes or additions that you all would want to make, and I'm happy to, you know, do that and figure out a way we can, you know, come to an agreement. But I did want to provide some background as to why, like, I drafted this memorandum this, in particular, this way. Over the past couple of months, you know, we've heard from the ADA coordinator, Will Rivera and Rebecca Hill, who I believe might be on this meeting, or at least they were. And then we've also heard from Assistant City Manager Liz Morales and folks with Code Enforcement and the Department of Transportation Mobility. All around access of, you know, public infrastructure, access around private sidewalks, and you know, repair of private sidewalks, you know, that do not meet the standards of Ordinance 25-12. And, you know, so there's a lot of different kind of, and then, you know, accessibility of private entities as well. So there's a lot of different issues kind of floating around. So rather than like kind of combining them all into one memo that would maybe get long and a little bit confusing, I want to take them as separate issues. So, you know, like I would plan with your all's assistance to, you know, maybe write a memo on ADA coordination or code enforcement of accessibility standards, that type of thing in future months. But, you know, that might also require more research and seeing what's possible. The way I kind of thought about this memo was more that, you know, there was kind of clear things as to what Ms. Morales and Code Enforcement and DTM communicated with us. One is that, you know, they have, like, they do enforce Ordinance 25-12 if they're contacted. They had an assistance program for homeowners to receive financial assistance, homeowners or property owners to receive financial assistance to repair sidewalks. But that program has been put on pause while they try to catch up with a backlog. But, you know, six people work on that backlog and can only get really two projects done a week. So one is like trying to propose a, you know, that's an issue of resources that really more people probably need to be put on this, you know, on this type of thing if city staffing allows. And the second was like, well, you know, for areas where sidewalks are vitally important for paths of travel, kind of going through the process of enforcing this with property owners, you know, might take a while, and getting it fixed might take a while. So, you know, if the city could prioritize fixing those sidewalks without the need to go through property owners by reforming somehow Ordinance 2512, you know, then that would be, you know, advantageous. So I'm happy to change that language, but I was just trying to think of like what would be maybe realistic and important. So, you know, main roads or arterial roads and, you know, close to bus pullouts and bus stops, fixing those sidewalks first. This is all kind of theoretical, and like the city attorney might be looking into what's actually possible. So, but this is also our opinion. So, Commissioner Espadas, apologize. Did you have comments, questions, thoughts?
Yeah, and this might be something in the future, because I'm definitely interested in the city taking a strong look at this as far as solutions, good solutions. One of the things that I do know is, and this could just be, and I, unfortunately this is only for businesses, although there might be a loophole other ways. But there is a tax credit available for small businesses to make areas within their business accessible. The problem with that is that basically the small businesses that would be eligible wouldn't have the money ahead. So I was just thinking out loud of like, if the city could provide like a loan fund where the business could then make the repairs and then with their tax credit money, because it's a credit, it's a direct credit, pay back that loan. And that might be an option for the businesses. I was just at an area of businesses this past week, and there's no sidewalk. It's all gravel. So that just looking, it's not a comprehensive solution, but it is a start to start looking at mm-hmm. some more creative ways to find funding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good, idea. And something that we could either add to this report as a suggestion, or like, if we're talking about enforcing, you know, access standards, like, you know, in general within, you know, businesses or private property owners, we could add that as a solution too. Cause this is, you know, private sidewalks are kind of interrelated, but then there's that type of, you know, like, tax incentive can be used for other access elements within the business and improvements. So we could also add it in to, like, we could also mention it in a future memo. We could do both. Yeah.
And if the individual homeowner were to start an LLC for $40, then they'd be eligible as a small business. Just saying, just throwing that out there. Not suggesting anyone do it. I'm just providing the information.
That's very, very kind of you. Yeah, so I'm happy to add that in as a possible, you know, solution too, if other members of the commission feel that is, you know, advisable, or have, you know, if there are other additions folks want to make, all ears. Commissioner Jordan? Thank you, Mike.
Got it now. I always forget that. Well, that's Derek. That's a really interesting suggestion. Low interest loan.
the lowest low interest loan for property owners, whether or not they're a business, actually sounds like a bit of a plan to me. I wonder, I've been looking at this entire document, as a matter of fact, and I emailed Zach about it just a little bit ago. I have a number of suggested changes that I think will actually shorten the document a little bit. I think there are a couple of things that probably could be safely deleted. I don't see that they're interesting and they're important, but not in this particular context. I would start by, first of all, addressing the city ordinance exactly as the city addresses it, and that's City Ordinance Chapter 25, Section 25-12. So just kind of adding those couple of words just in the description of what we're talking about so that it matches the way the city talks about this this kind of stuff. If anybody's reading along here, there's the third paragraph where the Tucson Commission on Disability Issues is an advisory body to mayor and council. This is a standard thing we put in all of our memoranda in the last couple of years, but I'd like to add a little bit to that. I just sidetracked myself, so I'll start again. That paragraph reads, currently, the Tucson Commission on Disability Issues, COBI in brackets, is an advisory body to mayor and council that meets monthly and receives reports from city departments and organizations. I'd like to add into that in between receives reports from, I would like to add, and provides comment, advice, and recommendations to city departments and organizations. So it makes us not just a body that city departments come along and talks to and then goes away. They actually receive advice and commentary from the people on this commission who are really subject experts in their own fields. I think nobody really opens their mouth when actually here when they're talking to people without knowing something about what they're talking about. Moving on from that, just a bit of grammar and here and there that I'd like to take care of. What have I noted here? These funds. Oh yeah, again a bit of grammar and just a slight minor language adjustments I'd like to make. And finally, here's one though. The two suggested action steps, I do not disagree with those in any way, just perhaps the way they're described. I'd like on page 3, we've got to the first paragraph, which says currently the city receives about 4 times as many requests for help under that program. I'd like to put that particular sentence before suggested actions.
Okay.
Because I think the two suggested actions should be short and to the point. Any description stuff should go in front of that. The following paragraph, the first sentence is good, and I like to leave that alone. The one that says, Cody asks Mayor and Council to reformulate or amend City Ordinance 25-12 we'll change that to chapter and blah, blah, to make some sidewalk maintenance a public responsibility, as Zach said before. I love that. I love that. What I'd like to do is take out the next sentence, which says that Cody understands that this type of ordinance is a standard part of municipal governance, for example, City of Phoenix. Don't think that's relevant. I don't personally don't think that's necessary. And it chops off, I don't know,
50 words.
Okay.
And, well, but add on there, despite the, oh, and that part, the final sentence of that paragraph, despite these issues, unsafe sidewalks still create dangerous situations for pedestrians with disabilities. Yes, very, very important, but I don't think that's a part of the second point. That should be the final sentence before suggestions for actions, in my view.
Okay. So if the commissioners would indulge me, if I could propose maybe a course of action. In the past, we have approved sending this sending memos of this type to mayor and council commissioners such as Commissioner Jordan and I reformulate or kind of make some edits. So what I would propose is maybe someone can make a motion that we do that, and with the addition with taking into account Commissioner Jordan and Commissioner Espadas' suggestions about, a loan and tax incentive program as a solution. And then, we will have Stephanie send it off to mayor and council after that. So we don't have to necessarily come back to this next month. Does that make sense to everyone? And can someone offer a motion if possible?
May I complicate matters just a tiny, tiny bit? I like the idea. Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? I would like to combine Commissioner Espadas' suggestion as a third action. So currently we have two suggested actions. I would like to make that a third action about low interest loans without being too specific about who I just say property owner, because I don't think the city is able to get involved in tax incentives, but they could certainly look at low interest loans to eligible applicants.
Sure. That's what I was trying to describe, is putting that as a third action item, and then maybe consulting with you, Commissioner Jordan, and you, Commissioner Espadas, to make sure everything looks as we want it to before we send it off to mayor and council. So if other commissioners, feel like that would be a course of action that we could take, I would entertain a motion at this point. Let me know if you need help with language of that motion.
I motion to move forward with the plan with the three edits between Commissioner Jordan and Espadas and Coble. Does that cloud qualify? That we will approve it now and add those additions to be moved forward as a technical motion. Sorry. Does it work?
I think that works, Commissioner Elliott. Thank you very much. Would be looking for a second.
I'll second.
Okay. Stephanie, can you take quick roll call?
Yep. Sue Krieger?
Yay.
Derek Espadas?
Yay.
Zach Coble?
Yay.
Ray Jordan?
Yay.
Billy Bogan?
Yay.
Wesley Derbyshire?
No.
Kate Elliott?
Yay.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you, everyone. So I will note for those still hanging in that I will be out of town and kind of in variable amounts of contact with my email over the course of the next week. So I will probably email after the 24th, Commissioner Jordan and Commissioner Espadas with, or Commissioner Jordan, if you have grammatical or structural edits and want to add, you can email me and I can kind of connect all of us. So
I'll likewise be traveling with limited access as well for the next week.
Yeah.
This is Ray. So, okay, that's cool. That gives me a week-ish to do a new, an edit, a bunch of edits and whatnot, and submit that and let you look at that and see whether you think between the three of us we've done a great job.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you. So we have two other agenda items that I would just want to run through really quite quickly since we're getting to about 4:50. The first is, I'm planning to have hopefully Sunvan, as they've reached out, come on to discuss the comprehensive operational analysis next meeting in November, which would be excellent. Looking forward to that if that works out. But then our next meeting is within like a few days of Christmas, basically, and the holiday season. For those celebrating, I just want to get a pulse on, from if anyone has any thoughts of if they're going to be available during our December scheduled meeting, if they wouldn't be. If you don't know right now, we can check back in November as well. But, just if people initially have plans, we're not going to be able to make quorum, then, so we could take a month off. But if no one has any particular, I'm sorry, is that you, Commissioner Bogan?
Yes. My thoughts with the December meeting is to go ahead and send out the meeting invite, and whoever we'll see who responds. But we've been doing a pretty good job getting quorum for the last, 7-8 meetings. So I think we're pretty good as far as showing up and meeting quorum. So okay. I propose that we just go ahead and send out the invite and see who responds that they can come.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. I'm happy to do that. We'll see who's available among city staff to come on. If I'm not able to procure a guest, it may be kind of an organizational meeting of where we're at, what we want to do next, that type of thing, which I know some of you might be hankering for at any rate. We'll go ahead and plan on that for December. Last agenda item, does anyone have any announcements of events or stuff that's happened in terms of stuff they've done in terms of disability community or CODI action? Commissioner Jordan, I see your hand raised, and I think we'll probably have one more. But, Commissioner Derbyshire, you would be after Commissioner Jordan.
Thank you very much. I've got a list of four. The first, and I'll try to make them as quick as I possibly can. Number one, if everything goes according to plan, I will be joining you from Melbourne, Australia for the next meeting. It'll be 9:30 in the morning there, which is still quite a good time for having a meeting on whatever day it'll be. I think it'll be Tuesday there. So that's number one. Number two, I have a happy report. The pedestrian push buttons on the corner of 22nd Street and Alvernon, whatever road or avenue or whatever it is, mm-hmm. Have been relocated so they are now actually accessible to somebody using a wheeled mobility device. You don't need to step over a concrete curb, fall out of your chair trying to reach it or any of that sort of stuff. That's happened just in the last week. The work people were just stacking up as I arrived at that intersection. There was another one done recently closer to where I live, which was also great. So there seems to be a program within the city that's addressing these things one at a time. And I don't know what their frequency is. That might be one a month, but who knows? Better than nothing at all. Number three of four on my little list is I went to Tucson Meet Yourself last weekend. Enjoyed myself. Really interesting event. Lacking disability representation, though. There was one city department representative represented. I've forgotten which department that was, but it wasn't something that was of immediate interest to me. But there were no disability organisations or events. In previous Tucson Meet Yourselves that I've been to, the wheelchair basketball team from U of A was there with our previous chair as the chief herder of wheelchair players. But they were absent this year, which was a bit disappointing. I always look forward to seeing those guys. It's also a missed opportunity for interaction with some of the and SunTran and SunVan are not necessarily city departments, but they're associated with the city. Opportunities to show people how to ride buses, either with or without disability. As I noticed, they have actually got some learn to ride bus sessions scheduled, but you have to go all the way up to the north side of town to their depot to do that. Tucson Meet Yourself would have been a wonderful opportunity for that. Final thing is that a subject that came up at our last meeting about the Reed Park Zoo and its redevelopment and the removal of the only ADA compliant accessible path to the zoo, that discussion, for want of a better word, following my complaint to the Office of Equal Opportunity Programs and the ADA coordinator, is ongoing, and it's not going as well as I would have liked. Let me just put it that way. Thank you for your attention. That is me.
Thank you. Commissioner Derbyshire, I realize I want to give you time, but we do have a limited amount. So if you could just take away.
Okay, great. So I just wanted to report that I did have a chance to visit Ward 2. I spent time with Chris Desborough, who's the community outreach director, and talked about some of the issues that I see around the city. We talked about transit, and we talked about sidewalks. And on the transit side, you know, the fun stuff is that they're, you know, still looking at in the future the possibility of doing on-demand service, which is an exciting opportunity for, you know, the disabled community, those who use SunVan currently to be able to get that. And we'll see how that goes, and we'll see if that is able to come into effect. I mean, you know, they're still in the process of working through that. And the other, you know, when I spoke to him about, other things, I did speak to him about SunTran, and I gave him a short list of small nitpick stuff. I kind of really dig into the minutiae of stuff like signage and the announcements on the buses and, little things like that that just are lacking, that SunTran is just, they're overlooking. And it's not serving, not even just the disabled community, but the community as a whole, right? You know, so I'm kind of looking at the broader picture for that, just for any transit rider. And as for the, you know, sidewalks and streets and stuff like that, that's a much more complicated, picture than I even imagined getting into, and I'm still working through that. But I plan to go back and, meet with Paul, you know, at some point in the near future. And that's where I stand. And thank you. It's a great meeting today.
Thank you, Commissioner Derbyshire. Unless any other commissioner has, any brief comment, I will, call this meeting adjourned as we are at 5 o'clock limit. Commissioner Bogan, did you have something brief?
Very briefly, sorry for being late today, first of all. And secondly, the 28th V-Rate will be happening in Phoenix on November 1st. That's a